This is a work session on case number 18-395, Midwest Grain Trading and NODAC Grain, the roving grain buyer and the grain warehouse insolvencies. So I don't have any comments in terms of opening. I'm ready to dive right in. Do we need to go around the table and identify everyone who's here? I'm Commissioner Brian Crosius. With me are Commissioners Randy Christman, Commissioner Julie Fedorchek.
Steve Kalb with staff.
Conrad Crockford with staff.
Mitch Armstrong, Special Assistant to Attorney General.
Ilana Jeffcoat-Sacco, staff.
Shelley Bosky, staff.
Jill Kringstead, staff.
Randy, do you want to tee it up, or since I...
No, I have been working on the case and working it through, and a lot of my questions actually have been answered, so I didn't specifically ask for the work session. So I might be able to answer some things, or staff and our attorney are here to answer, I guess, what I can't, but I don't have anything specific.
Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh. Well, I don't know, maybe both of us asked for the work session, but I know I was one who thought it would be a good opportunity for us to sit down and talk through some of this stuff, because I'm concerned about that we're really clear on what our role is and isn't, and that we're really focused on managing the trust assets for the potential claimants and minimizing expenses to that end, and effectively communicating that to the public in all the different avenues that needs to happen to occur, so that people understand what's going on. And I just think that this whole situation is filled with finger-pointing. We're seeing that already. And it just continues, the more and more complicated it gets. And I think that we need to be very clear and strong and deliberate in how we communicate our role to the public. And so I thought we should sit down and make sure that we're all three of us are on the same page with that, and talk about any potential communication strategies that we might need to use beyond just decisions in this office to get the word out about how we're managing this, why we're making the decisions that we are, and who we are intended by law to serve. So that's why I was looking forward to this discussion with our attorneys, to clarify all of this, to make sure we're all on the same page and talk about some of those issues in terms of the broader communication to the public, which is not something we typically have faced in an insolvency. So, again, every case is different.
Would it help, commissioners, if I provided a just status update of what's been going on the last few months, kind of the big picture items, what we've been working on, and then, you know, delve into any questions from there?
I think that would be great.
Yes, before you start, I think it's a coincidence, because I was talking to Steve yesterday about the exact same issues and how we're communicating, what we can do, what we can't do. I see the briefs, Mitch, you've sent, obviously, material out. Been visiting with Conrad as well. And, of course, for the public, the three commissioners cannot just walk into each other's office and visit, because it's an open case. So this is the only venue that we can actually communicate with one another, this type of a venue, so when it's announced to the public. But I'm getting calls, I think we're all getting calls, and I think the public is understandably frustrated, especially people living in proximity to the elevator. Mm-hmm. And I think it's great. One of my big questions, and I suspect you will cover this, what can we do and what can't we do? And it looks like things are finally moving on the cleanup of the rotting peas on site. I realize it's frustrating to the public, because you get into, well, it's the Department of Health. Well, what can they do at the county level? Do they have an ordinance in place, et cetera? And so it seems like things are moving in the right direction, but it's taken longer, I know, than the people living in proximity would have liked. But with that, Mitch, please.
And just as a matter of kind of leading off of that, it's really a matter of timing. So we were appointed trustees in January, early February by the courts. We immediately filed a notice of appointment, which starts the process of people submitting claims. That process goes till early April. At that point in time is when we can really sit down and delve into these claims and we start writing the report, okay? And that's the report is kind of the big step of what we recommend to the court. So after we get the claims, we'll be back here with the commission with the draft report saying, here's our recommendation, here's kind of, you know, the way we recommend taking things. Do you agree with this? Because there's going to be some gray areas in that report, which we'll have to discuss, I imagine, with as many claims as we have. Other than that, what we've been doing in the meantime is trying to sell this grain. And the grain is at Tunbridge, and there's grain at Roarville. And there's different issues with both sites. So we've had issues of getting access to the grain because of either faulty equipment or problems at the site that prevent us from doing that. So that's really been what's going on. We focused on Tunbridge first because that was, you know, the recommendation of the inspectors, and because of some of the site issues at Roarville, we just weren't able to get that grain tested. So we got bids on Tunbridge. We've been moving grain out of Tunbridge starting this week. I think the timeline is kind of, we think we're going to be done at the site in Tunbridge by the end of next week, hopefully assuming everything goes well. Of course, there's issues with snow, weather, all of those things that play into that. But also there's timing because we're trying to get as many bids as possible on this grain so that we can get the best price for these beneficiaries. Right now, we've got two different companies with the various different bins who have agreed to buy grain at Tunbridge. So we're working at two different companies because that gets our trust the most money for these beneficiaries. At Roarville,
that grain is all contracted and, like, we've selected the vendors who are buying it.
There's one remaining bin that has some serious access issues, but we do have a bid on that. We only received one bid for that bin, and there's an issue we'll have to follow up on that. There's peas in that bin on top of durum. The bid we got is only for the peas, so we've got to work through that issue and then do something with the durum. So we'll work towards that. There's some durum at Roarville, so you know, we'll have to talk with staff and see in the bidders and see if we can maybe combine that with some of the durum at Roarville when we bid that out. But we'll have some durum left over when this is all done. It looks like that we'll have to deal with.
So Tunbridge.
This isn't relevant, but why on earth would they put peas on top of durum?
If I had an answer for all the questions of why did he do this way, there's just a lot of different things there that's what's making it difficult here. I mean, we've got water in the basement of the elevator at Roarville. That's what's causing us, you know, problems there. We've got several different whys. I mean, this stuff is in a bin that doesn't have a way to get it out of the bin other than kind of, I don't want to call them extreme measures, but unusual measures. Mm-hmm.
So the Tunbridge site is the one that has the rotting grain. The piles,
yes,
the outdoor piles.
That's the site, correct.
And so we had to, in order to get the grain out of the Tunbridge to market so that we could capture the best possible price and get the maximum amount for the claimants, we had to make some accommodations and move some snow and move some dirt on that site, correct? We had to move snow to get access.
Right.
And that exacerbated the smell.
Right. That's what we've been told.
So we've been told. Okay, so the smell and the rotting grain and all of that issue, that is not our responsibility.
Just one thing to be clear, that rotting grain was at the site when we got there.
Right.
It was rotted when we got there, it's rotted now.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have any it doesn't provide an asset of value to the trust, so therefore it is not our responsibility to take care of it. Is that correct? As you read the law?
I think that's correct, but I also think the law is specific about how that is taken care of, which is by other entities outside of the Public Service Commission in general.
So Mitch, who do you view the law specifies is responsible for that grain?
I think...
Or that cleanup?
Through the Department of Health, the local and the statewide Department of Health, they work to... There's laws that allow them to take care of that problem.
Okay. And they're, we've been in contact with them, and they're doing that.
Yeah, and I think really what there was maybe some confusion about the PSC's role in general, in that, you know, as we become trustee, our name is on attached to Hunter Hansen. I think people wanted to come to us first, but
right.
through the process and a lot of our discussions with the local people and with the Department of Health, I understand now that it's going to be removed today through what I view as the correct process to okay. take care of that.
Could you read Stacy? She should sit in here.
I think, you know, but still, if you're in proximity, and I don't want to, and of course, you know, there are a number of issues. One, what type of compensation will producers ultimately receive through the liquidation of grain, for the credit sale contracts, through the indemnity fund, bonding that Hunter Hansen or Midwest Grain has in place. But for the people on the ground who have been enduring this foul odor for an extended period of time, they're at the point they don't care ultimately who's responsible. So one of the questions I had, how are we communicating? And I, again, Conrad has been very helpful when we visited, or I shouldn't say in terms of how are we, but do we know how the health department, I should say, is communicating with these people? Are they giving them a time frame? Are they saying, hey, we're looking into it? Or does it just sound like, well, you know, on one hand, you have one agency saying, well, it's not us. Then another agency saying, well, it could be us. Or if it is them.
I don't know if it's that detailed. I mean, the health department's been in communication with us as well. I mean, I don't think anybody was ignoring this issue, but there was, it's a very unusual situation, not to mention that this stuff is all underneath snow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, the colder it is, the less it smells. I mean, this was going to be a problem this spring, regardless of what we did.
Yep.
So it wasn't that nobody was dealing with it. There'd been lots of communications with it from the local level. I don't know. I mean, lots is a vague term, but I mean, we'd had contact with the Department of Health. They were responding to us and communicating with us. We've had, I guess I've personally had contact with the state attorney up there. He's been, you know, we've been back and forth a few times over the last few weeks trying to figure out what to do with this. I think everybody's been working on it. I mean, of course, if it's starting to smell bad, it's not going to be fast enough necessarily to the person who has to smell it. And I'm not trying to minimize that issue, but our role as the PSC is really that first thing that you said, Commissioner Crocius, is to administer the grain assets to get the best recovery we can for our beneficiaries. And that's really the extent of our role.
So to that end, Mitch, I'm concerned about any thoughts on the local level that suggest that we pay for some of that cleanup and take money out of these funds for farmers who are already going to be, you know, it's going to be far less than what they lost. We're going to be able to give them back from the trust fund. So I'm concerned that there's attorneys out there on the county side that think that we have some sort of obligation, legal obligation there, to use trust fund dollars for that cleanup.
Yeah, in my discussion with the state attorney in Pierce County, he may think there is some obligation for us to pay for some of that cleanup. And I said, you know, send us, you know, what you think our obligation is, and we'll take it under consideration. But I don't think it's our obligation on the front end to take care of it. And he understood that. I mean, okay. Probably won't surprise you that oftentimes when attorneys are talking on the phone, they don't agree on the phone. But I mean, I just said to him, we don't think it's our responsibility, but send it to us and we'll consider it.
Okay.
You know, if they wanted to, it's not your typical claim under a trust, but they could submit a claim for us to evaluate through the processes of this report as well. And after seeing what they have to say, we might say, yeah, this is something we should pay for. Right now, I don't see how it's an expense of the trust that we have, but I'm always open to considering additional information.
Okay. I mean, do you guys see this lot differently than what you've heard me say in terms of our responsibility for cleanup on that site? And you don't have to, even if you don't want to and want to wait to say, please, you know, you don't have to answer that question. But
well, I think Mitch's advice, which I think it makes sense that, you know, there's a good argument for why it's not the trust's responsibility. But I think, too, that them presenting an argument to us of why it should be, or some portion of it should be, that it's just, you know, a part of the expense of moving things, like testing of the grain or something like that would be. I guess I'm open to someone making a case that it should be, but I think initially when I hear Mitch's rationale for why it shouldn't be, that so far that's the most persuasive because the others haven't made their case. I think the important thing was, and I'm not going to be satisfied until I see that it actually is done, but I mean, we were told that it's happening today. What I was so frustrated with yesterday was, why can't it just get done and then we figure out who pays for it, because it's going to get done at some point. And it sounds like maybe that's exactly what's happening today, that now it is happening and we don't feel it's the trust's responsibility, and maybe the state's attorney up there feels that some portion of it ought to be, but you know, the cost is going to be there. We know Hunter Hansen isn't going to clean it up, but now hopefully it's being done today, and they should make their case if they think that some of it ought to be on the responsibility of the egg producers.
And I can confirm, I spoke with our inspector up there, Anthony Schwartz, and he said that when I spoke to him at about 8 a.m. this morning, he said they loaded up the first side dump truck and took it out of there. So it looks like they've got one truck and one payloader dedicated to that to work on hauling it out of there today. So it is happening as of this morning.
My thought has been, while we may certainly have can make the argument that it's not our legal responsibility to clean up the site, you know, all eyes are on us in terms of who's going to get it taken care of ultimately, or to make sure that it's taken care of. And if that means continuing to facilitate, it's getting cleaned up today. But I can't imagine the whole scheme of things that, yes, it dilutes the proceeds to the claimants, assuming we don't get recovery if we have to push through and just get this taken care of and deal with the cost, as Commissioner Christman mentioned later. I don't know what the total cost of the cleanup is going to be, but I think it's going to be a small fraction. I don't even know. Is it a two-day job? Is it a three-day job? Do we have any idea?
Nobody's giving me any specific numbers on it. I mean, the number that was thrown out there was it's maybe like $5,000 to clean up, but I certainly did feel like that was okay. A firm number when it was said to me, and it wasn't represented to me as a firm number.
And just going back, this is very unofficial math, but just thinking about moving grain myself and doing that over the years, that, you know, getting in and just getting it cleaned up wasn't, let's say it was no more than up to 10,000, but no more than 10,000. So the cleanup that's taking place today, will this be wrapped up in the next couple of days? They're just going to go straight through, get everything cleaned up, or can they only do part now because there's still snow piles out there?
We're not coordinating the cleanup efforts. This is being done on a township and county level. So their plan is to get in there, and from what I understand, talking with one of the township trustees yesterday, is to haul out as much as they can. They don't know as far as how much might be, you know, if there's any on the ground, or as far as if there's a different way they've got to remediate the smell that's there. So they're still working with the health department on that. But that's they're taking care of all the coordination of that. So I'm not sure how long it's going to take.
I appreciate you guys respecting kind of the various jurisdictions that are involved here, because I do think that what Brian's talking about is all eyes are on us, because we kind of have the forefront when it comes to insolvencies. But we don't have, you know, the legal we don't have the legal direction in law to do some of these things, nor do we have the staff or the budget. So from a precedent standpoint, setting the stage for future complicated insolvencies, I think it's important that we say this is what our job is. This is where we focus our time. This is what the legislature is telling us to do. and not get involved in all these other extraneous issues that are important, but it's not our role. And I don't like pushing off and saying, oh, that's somebody else's job. So I like that we're coordinating and making sure it's happening, but being clear at the same time that this isn't our role.
Well, with a thing like this, too, I mean, they needed confirmation from us that that wasn't one of our assets. I mean, I think that was the main call of my conversation with the state attorney yesterday. He said, you know, do you claim this is your asset? And I said, no.
Okay.
I mean, he wanted that verification because they don't want to go in and take our trust asset either.
Yeah. You didn't want that smelly grain?
No.
It's not worth a lot. All right. Good. So that's that. Does that conclude Tunbridge then? Once that's done and the grain gets all moved to sale, are we done with Tunbridge?
Once the grain is completely moved out of there, we'll be done with that location.
Well, it looks like we'll have 4,000 bushels of durum left over.
Oh.
With the exception of the 4,000 bushels of durum, we're going to
bin with the peas.
Yeah, we're going to talk to the bidder on that to see if, you know, if there's any interest in taking that, or if that's something that we might be able to just deal with Roarville, since we do have durum over at Roarville as well.
So that last bin at Tunbridge, that hasn't, that's going to take a little more work, or maybe a lot more work to get out of the bin. Quality concerns with that particular
The quality in it is fairly good. We sent the bids out to seven potential companies that would be interested in bidding on it. We received one bid back. Part of the reason we probably don't see too much action on that bin or bidders on that is because it is a mixed grain bin. Some of these processing facilities that handle peas don't have the ability to do sorting or to separate the grain commodities out. And so they lack that ability to do that. And some just aren't interested in having a mixed commodity bin in general. So,
understandably, that's just ridiculous to have done that in the first
place. Well, yeah, very, very much so. And this bin is approximately a 14,000 bushel bin. And when it was originally installed in the elevator, it had the ability, you know, years and years ago, to be able to unload itself. It had an auger system in the bottom of the bin, but that's since been, you know, dismantled, rusted out, no longer usable. So then the bin itself is good, but the way to get the grain out of there is not. It's not like it's an elevated hopper bottom or anything like that. So that's where the complication comes in the fact of getting the grain out of the bin.
And that'll be up to the person that buys it.
We're going to be talking with them about that and seeing what solutions we can come up with on that.
All right.
And then there's the garage with some durum in it that we have sold to the person who bought the usable part of the outside storage.
Correct, yes.
Picked up yet.
For feed?
Yes.
So at a low price. I would imagine the mix bin is not going to fetch a very good price either.
The mixed bin for the peas came in lower than what, you know, about 70 cents lower than what the other bins came in for the bidder that did bid on those. And so it's in part of that's just the mixed commodity of it, but it's not going to be like it's a total loss or anything.
Because obviously it's not the ideal way to store this stuff, but it's two layers. It's not all
No, it's not all commingled and everything. So you can take, you know, it gets a little iffy when you get towards the bottom.
Yeah.
You actually got the durum there. But no, we can pull peas off of it successfully without getting into the durum.
Is the rancher aware of that, Ben?
The farmer? Absolutely, yeah.
Would potentially use it for feed?
Potentially, I don't know. We didn't ask him to do a bid on it. But the durum, maybe he might be interested in that durum butt that's in the bin there. So he's actually the payload operator for the township that's out there right now, so we can talk to him. It's been a very good working relationship with him.
The price we got for the peas was, I mean, it was a good market.
It was a good market price. I mean, as far as the peas that are in that bin, there's approximately 8,600 bushels in there. We're looking at, as is, it comes in at about $3.30 per bushel is what the bidder put on it. And this is the same bidder that's taken other bins that he bid as is for $4 a bushel because it's a little bit more known and we didn't have the mixed grain. But
you know, as is. He's not taking any discounts or anything like that. So once the destination weights are determined, I mean, that's the price that we're going to get for it. So we estimate in the ballpark of probably $26,000 coming off the piece of that bin.
Good. Okay. So then we go to the other one.
Roarville.
Roarville.
What are we facing there? So I mean, I've read the updates, but...
In Roarville, we've got the grain sampled. We actually had to hire a probing company to get it sampled because of the site problems. Our focus has been getting the grain sold at Tunbridge. Our next step then will be getting bids on the grain at Roarville and, frankly, trying to figure out how we're going to get that grain out of the elevator. There's water all in the basement, which includes the boot. We have no idea if that boot will work. There is a lot of grain in there, and we're trying to figure out if there's some way to back it out or what. Conrad probably has maybe a little more details if the commission has questions, but we've been brainstorming lots of ideas on Roarville for a number of
weeks. So how about the water? I mean, it seems like the water is going to be an issue no matter what unless you can just go over it. So what? How are we going to get the water out of there? Are we just going to let it drain? Are we pumping it? I mean,
there's kind of our two issues with the water. One, if we get that water out of there, we don't know that we're still not going to just get more water coming in. We don't think so. We think it's a pipe break, not groundwater, but you know, we don't know that. But we also don't know if when we get the water out of there, the equipment's going to work. So we're concerned of undertaking the expense to get that water out of there when it may not provide us any benefit.
How many bushels? What's the estimate again? I've got that somewhere.
See here. Roarville, we're looking at 60,000 bushels of yellow peas, 4,600 of durum, 2,800 of barley, and 1,100 hundredweight of canola. Very, very rough numbers, approximately $300,000 to $310,000 in assets at that location.
And that,
how much did you say?
Approximately $300,000 to $310,000 in assets. Now, that's a very rough estimate. We still need to crunch our numbers based off of the grades that we received. So we took kind of just a middle-of-road bid on those yellow peas that were there. That's more of the unknown one. But the grades came back fairly good. We didn't have any major issues with it, considering this is the location that had some suspected water damage on the grain. But we didn't find any issues in the bin where they probed at that had any rotting grain or sour smell or anything of that nature. So the question comes in then, once we can take the grades and factor out, you know, what that, you know, those potentially may be worth, is the two options that I've spoken about before, as far as, you know, we looked at a grain vac company coming in just to totally ignore the water situation altogether, vac the grain out of the bins and have it leave the facility that way. Some of the cons to that process, some of the issues come in with the, you know, the damage that it could do to yellow peas.
And how many bins of peas are there out of this whole total of grain there?
Out of Roarville, let's see here. Sixteen of the bins at Roarville have yellow peas in them. That's the bulk of the grain that's there.
Okay. How many bins total are there?
We've got over there. We're looking at 24 bins at Roarville.
What are they, smaller bins, 3,800 bushel bins-ish?
Yeah, these are all internal. It's a wood crib elevator, so it's the internal bins of the facility. I don't have the exact capacity of the facility here, but it came in the neighborhood of, I think the facility itself is like 150,000 bushels total. It's not a large location. And the bins aren't sizable. They're not some of the larger ones that are out there. But
so the vacuum option, the backing, doesn't really seem viable if you're going to destroy the quality of the piece. If 16 of the 24 are piece.
Right, but and that's what we still have to do. We still have to take the grades that we got back and look at them and put, you know, what we estimate a dollar value on those to see, you know, do they qualify? Are they, you know, food grade or more are they animal feed grade as they sit currently right now?
So if they're animal feed grade, then
the backing isn't going to be an issue if it's animal feed. It's just going to go into a mill.
And who makes that determination?
We'll talk with the inspectors when they analyze the grades.
Okay.
That we got from those bins.
Well, ultimately, though, the buyers are going to...
The buyers have met... I mean, ultimately, it's the value is going to be based off the term of what a buyer is willing to pay for it at that point. With the grain vacking, that comes at a sizable cost. It's $30,000, what we estimate for the time that it's going to take for them to do that. Additionally, you know, they're on site. They're pulling the grain out of the bins. We've got to have a place for that grain to go immediately, you know, whether that's into a truck or somewhere else. I don't know if logistically, you know, the question to ask is, could the potential successful bidders support that with the number of trucks that they could get there to be able to continually just, I mean, load trucks? Because that company's going to be there. We're going to want to maximize their time so they have a lot of downtime and extend that process even more. So those are some of the concerns that we have with the vacking operation. We've already expressed the concerns we have with the water operation, but on the other hand, if the facility does operate, that we can remove grain at a much more reasonable pace as trucks show up to be loaded. So
how do you come to a decision on me? Because you're not going
to
know.
From my perspective, it's whichever one appears to be the most, bring in the most money.
Right. But in order to decide whether or not the water is manageable and whether we can, you know, how much the report pairs might be, et cetera, you need some input. You need some data to help you analyze that. Do you call another elevator to come out and look at it and say, you know, I mean, how do we get that info other than just guessing?
So if the peas are food quality, so they're worth more, we'll talk with Mike McNamee and Anthony and see, you know, what do you think the chances are we can get this boot working? You know, we'd have to get the water out of there, get the boot working. How much would that cost? You know, if it's, you know, a couple $1,000s, we might have to undertake getting that out because it's going to bring us in $50,000 more on the piece.
Well, and even if it isn't food quality, it seems to me the decision is if it costs less than $30,000, you take the water out and fix the, you know,
We've done testing on the water and all of this to see what our options are with disposing of that water. So at some point we'll be able to get an idea of how much it'll cost to get that water out of there. And it might be, you know, something that's worth a shot to try and get that water out of.
Any idea how many gallons of water are sitting in the booth?
Rough estimate is in the neighborhood of 60,000 gallons of water in that basement. So, and the water quality test did come back, talking with the health department, that the water could be discharged. It doesn't have any issues with it, so it could just be generally discharged stormwater.
So then the repairs, I mean, the pumping of the water wouldn't be the huge expense, would it? It would be the repairs of the potential repairs.
Yeah, and we've talked, I mean, can we rent equipment? What can we do? I mean, it's a weird boot. The boot, at least as I understand, it's not kind of like your normal boot, but I could be wrong, but it's...
I'm not too sure on that. Yeah.
We understand that even when it was operating, they were constantly having to pull groundwater out of the end of the boot. So it's
what's the level of confidence that it would even function if drained?
Well, talking with the warehouse inspectors, I mean, and they both have experience working in these facilities before coming to us, they're both fairly confident that it could be operated.
But this has been an ongoing. I'm sorry. This has been an ongoing issue, though, prior to the pipes bursting.
Water in the boot.
Water in the boot.
Just monitoring it. Yeah.
This is what came out kind of in the beginning of November when they were saying they had water damage, and they had the news articles out there regarding the Roarville elevator. At that point in time, the only thing that had water was just the boot pit itself. We've talked with CHS, the previous owner of the facility, and said that they had to have someone go out there pretty much on a daily basis just to pump that area out, just in the Devil's Lake region. It's a high water table. Mm-hmm.
But then it got exacerbated at some point between when our last inspection, our last measurement of the facility was in the beginning of December, and we went to the facility again after we became trustee in the beginning of February. I think this probably happened at the end of January, but what we think happened is the propane ran out for the furnace and caused some pipes to freeze. At that point, one of the pipes burst and just flooded the basement out. And then that water ran over into flooded the basement of the office, and then that water migrated over into the rest of the elevator facility, under the scale pit and into the boot pit as well.
Okay. So the quality, the next steps are determining the quality, and then crunching the numbers in terms of whether it's better to spend $30,000 to vac it out or to spend the money to pump and fix the existing system to get the grain out that way.
Yes. And also pumping on a daily basis until it's...
Potentially, yeah. Just for whatever would migrate in from the ground if there's anything given the frost level right now.
If our goal is... I mean, our goal should be to maximize the amount of money for the trust fund, but it's got to be to do it in a timely manner too. Getting an extra 0.5% 2 years later doesn't help these guys very much, especially since they're not getting interest. But, and the reason I bring that up, I can see us, we're going to miss load restrictions. By the time we get all this done, load restrictions will be on. There's several miles of gravel road, as I understand it, to get even to a highway. And they're going to not want that torn up. Is it possible for us to seek out a grain buyer who, you know, handles multiple lines of grain like Hunter Hansen did, and just sell it and not deal with moving it? How much of a responsibility do we have beyond selling it to actually get it off the site for whoever owns the site?
We have a responsibility to sell it. I'm not sure that we could find a buyer that would say, yes, I mean, they need to get it off of there. It's not...
And they need to pay immediately.
Yeah.
So if they can't get the money for
it. I don't know who's going to end up owning this, the bank, or if he bought this directly from an individual that he owes money to, or if with his other sales he ends up owning it himself. But... I keep wondering, and I just use them for an example, but like Fessenden, they deal in all kinds of commodities. They're a big commodity. If they've got all summer to deal with this, they might be interested in buying this stuff at somewhat of a discounted price, and they actually know about who the right people are to get in touch to fix the boot and... and when to get it done when that outfit isn't busy and can do it at a good price. And it just would seem to me that if it's possible to not actually move it off site and on our behalf, to just see if there's someone who's interested in this as a block and on their time.
I feel the same urgency as Randy.
Steph, we've all had an urgency with this from day one. Mm-hmm. I mean, I kid you not, I know at least more than one of us has worked on Roarville and or Tunbridge every day since January. I mean, we have been definitely dealing with this as quick as we can. This Roarville elevator situation is really complicated, mm-hmm. with the water versus the vac versus what it does to the grain. Certainly if somebody was willing to take it on site, I mean, it would be their responsibility to figure out their rights for staying there longer or something like that, but I mean, I don't think we would necessarily reject that out of hand or recommend rejecting it out of hand. It's just a matter of, it would be not the usual way they do business. And I mean, I have a hard time believing, at least what we've heard is these aren't, you know, modern elevators. I have a hard time believing Fessenden's going to give us a real good price and then say, but we're responsible for however we can get it out of here.
No, I don't think that's realistic. I like the sound of that, to be able to sell it, fetch a good price, and have them come and get it. But I think we have to be realistic on what a buyer is going to be willing to do.
And, I mean, Mike and Anthony, I think, are experienced with how to get these grains out of the elevators, but it's just a matter of what we can do that brings the best price here. And if it's somebody says, fine, we'll buy it on site and we'll take care of it, fine. You know,
yeah,
we probably have to say
happen,
we have to be out
just,
of there by a
I
certain
don't see
time.
It happening.
My point is the best price a year from now isn't as good as a little bit less price now.
Yeah, agree. I mean, I think everybody knows we have to have that stuff out of there this spring yet. I mean, it's unless just nobody will buy it, we're going to have to sell it.
Is there...
I mean, as long as the prices are reasonable.
To the point of, you know, trying to get it out in the next couple of weeks or, you know, moving that decision along more quickly, are the guys, while they're up there working on this, on the Tunbridge site, are they able to do any work on Roarville in terms of the quality and moving that forward too? Or what are they observing up there right now?
They've got one guy on site at Tunbridge verifying the measurements, one site on site at Dakota Dry Bean right now, verifying the receipts, you know, to make sure that everything checks out. So they're
tied up.
Yeah. I mean, unless we would need additional inspectors to do Tunbridge and Roarville at the same time.
Okay. Is Patrick Hart available for contracting? Or any other former inspectors to help out?
That's not a question that I've looked into at this point, but I can if the commission would like.
I don't know how you guys feel about that or
does he even have
the other
does he even,
guy
well,
that was here for years and years? His name is
Tim.
Tim, yeah. I mean, it's probably hard to come in at this point and catch up and be real speedy because you're. But
I would be a little hesitant just in terms of the optics. What if there was a question and then we had a former employee, if they want to bid or if there's a...
No, I don't mean that. I mean to help us with the work. Like
oh, internally.
Like figure out the value.
Right,
take
work
the
on that stuff.
On
just because while it's melting, like I feel like we've got an opportunity now with, you know, before it gets into like a month of complete soggy mess to try to get that grain out of there. And so that's the urgency I feel, like taking advantage of the freeze that we still have in the ground and on the site. That's pros and cons with the water issue, but if the vac is going to be the way to go, I don't know. That's the only other thing I would throw out there is if it would be of value to have an additional person on board to help for a month to get this, you know, the Roarville site going, then we should explore that, in my opinion.
You know, Commissioner Crispin, we might be leaping past things that you've already thought of or pushing forward. Are we advancing on things, covering the same ground that you've already covered?
Some of it, but that's okay.
Well, Randy, do you want to entertain that as portfolio holder, or is that a waste of time? Are you comfortable with the direction of doing Tunville and then Tunbridge and then going over to Roarville?
Well, at this point, we're not going to be load restrictions. I mean, it's melting. It's the sloppy time has started now.
That was, I mean, part of the process was with Tunbridge, we were able to get in there, get it out without, you know, the water issues,
right,
and the grain back issues. That's why... One of the reasons why we started moving and selling grain at Tunbridge, because Roarville was always, with all the issues there, was always going to take longer time, and we were going to run into load restrictions and issues like that.
And first we had to wait for the ice to melt so we could do the water tests.
We'd drill a hole in the water.
Then, you know.
The ice, I mean.
And then we had to wait for the probing company because we didn't have sufficient probes to get it test, and now we're waiting for the test results, because if it's feed stuff, then I think it's pretty clear. We get it.
We have the results. We need to crunch the numbers and finish analyzing what we've got.
We just got the results a couple days ago, maybe end of last week.
And last week we got them.
Yeah.
So.
Well,
if it's very close, then I think we need to take the speediest measure, which would seem to me to be the grain vacking and selling it at feed price. If it's pumping a basement out, and I don't know if there'll be continued tests of the water. If this was an initial test, then we have to continue as we're pumping it or anything like that, and then whatever fixes are involved with the boot. I'm guessing this is not real new modern equipment. I've dealt all my life with old equipment. Sometimes you wait for parts and things like that. If the quality of it is such that we're talking a couple $1,000s out of this whole trust fund and causing delays, I don't think that's worth waiting for.
And we don't disagree with that at all. We do have to look at, it's not just as simple as vacuuming it out and saying, okay, here, take this. Vacuuming it out is what we looked at and did some research on. That takes approximately a week. You have to have trucks that can keep up with that grain vacuuming operation, and you're dumping it on the ground. And then we've got another ton bridge, potential situation over there. So I don't want to say it sounds like it's the easy answer and it's the great idea, but we have there are the challenges logistically that come with that too.
Which, no. I mean, in all of that, if that ends up being the situation, it'll of course drive the price down as well to have to deal with that. Not to mention the damage to the peas if they were better quality.
Logistics are challenging. Everyone's scrambling right now to
much would cost
to move grain before load restrictions.
Pump the water out. Well, when we were doing initial estimates, we were in the neighborhood of, I think, 10 to 12,000, just because part of that would cost the expense of a heater to melt the surface ice first to be able to get the water out. I can't imagine that the ice down there is melted to a point that it's just water at this point, just because it's in a basement, but I'm sure it's got to be thawing a little bit in there.
10 to 12,000, you said? Yeah. Okay. Well, I guess you guys have heard what we're concerned about.
What
speed?
What else is out there? That, we've covered the rotting grain issue. We've covered sale of the assets, or
the other
grain
issue.
Asset.
The other issue assets. That came up yesterday was the auction.
Right.
I think that's the bigger issue.
So, again, this is probably a painful answer to give to individuals who are questioning how on earth can he be selling grain bins when we're looking at the dollars attached to the insolvency, the potential dollars that we're looking at. And it's more than just potential, but we haven't zeroed in exactly on all of that, but because it's still a work in progress. I know it takes a lot of time to get everything calculated and crunched out. But what's the...
Really, the way I would explain to it is we're a trustee for the grain and the grain assets, the byproduct from the grain, things originating from the grain. From my view, we're that kind of trustee. Like if you were a bankruptcy trustee, then you take control of all of somebody's personal assets, everything there and all of that. But we just deal with the grain. The claimants can take whatever other legal action or other action they want with Hunter Hanson for like his personal assets or chasing those, but those are not things that really fall within our trust to go.
No, and I realize that, but again, the optics, particularly with anyone impacted by this insolvency, but
because
the public in general, the optics look
the way I would explain
terrible.
It, if for anybody listening is, just because somebody may be an insolvent warehouseman doesn't necessarily mean that they are bankrupt. Mm-hmm. They may have another business that's really profitable. So we can't go in and start taking their personal property that way when it's outside of that.
Right.
But there's options for the people who are owed money. So and it, the same analysis would apply vice versa when it looks like they don't have enough money to cover all this. But, you know, it's really to collect on personal assets, you know, that are all, you know, purchased, at least certainly purchased pre-insolvency. It's just outside of what are considered trust assets.
But what is frustrating me, and I think is frustrating a lot of people, and, I mean, I respect you guys as legal minds, but it just is beyond me that anyone could have ever intended at least to write the law this way. It appears to me you talk about, okay, just because they're insolvent in this business doesn't mean they're bankrupt in everything they do. But the perception is, and I mean, it seems almost inarguable, that we got to last fall and they started a process where just buying grain, selling it, maybe had, now this part is a presumption on mine, lots of other debt, and used that to pay for assets that now he's selling. And so these assets, at least partially, I'm thinking there's a good case to be made, were paid for with this grain money. And I just can't believe that we would have ever intended to set up a law that is the foundation for a scam like that. If I want to pay for a bunch of stuff and then sell it later, I'll just buy grain, use the proceeds from that to pay for this, and I get to keep all the money when I sell it.
Our law, though, is not the only remedy under the law. That's kind of the thing. You know, the reason the law, at least from my reading of statutes, it is because you have all this grain in a warehouse. Somebody needs to take care of it, but the warehouseman is insolvent. So we step in to take care of this grain, get it sold. So, you know, instead of like the entire public coming in saying, well, that's my grain and that's my grain and that's my grain, we step in as the group, take care of this grain so there's an asset for the claimants to recover. Every one of these claimants has every other legal right they ever had, whether we were trustee or not, to go after Hunter Hansen and his products, you know. But if we're sitting here chasing around all of his proceeds and what they may have bought, that takes attention away from what our role is, selling the grain and getting this money. That's the way I see it. And then, you know, you run into all these other issues of, you know, on grain, the law provides these claimants with a first priority security interest. So we're not dealing with, like, the bank says they own, you know, we've dealt with that in other cases, but the law is clear that the claimants have the first priority security interest on the lien. So we're not having to chase around and see, well, does he have a loan on this bin? Does he have a loan on this auger? You know, and fighting with other people who have security interests on personal property that is not grain. That can be a very complicated process in making sure that, you know, we do have first priority. But the law with the grain, it's clear that we have the first priority.
And what can we do? I'm sorry, Lana.
Well, I was just going to say that lien is on that grain in the facilities. The roving statute is slightly different, and it's not there because it's a buy-sell. And there's another provision that says when it's sold in the ordinary course of business, the lien is gone. So the normal grain transaction, that's how a grain dealer gets rid of, you know, he's able to sell grain without that farmer lien being on it.
Well, what can we do without being perceived as giving legal advice that we're not supposed to be given to help these producers be aware that we are not their solution? If we're not, then I expect there's a lot of these people that think that we're the ones who are doing this. We licensed them. We I think are seen as being the solution for them, that on these, when they deal with a licensed grain dealer, they don't need to lawyer up and be going after his personal possessions.
Well, several of them have lawyered up and have lawsuits ongoing, and some of them have judgments. So at least those ones, you know, they have their own lawyer to provide them the advice. And I've had conversations with those lawyers and, you know, some of them about the action. I said, if you think we have some authority, I'm open to hear it from you. But, some of them, I mean, what many times when you hire a lawyer, is the cost of the lawyer worth what I'm going to get back, of course.
I'm actually thinking in terms of the sale of the bins. what keeps going through my mind, is that just to continue to pay for legal fees on his end? We don't know, but lawyers don't work for free, correct?
No.
So, Mitch, the one term that I keep coming back to, especially as it relates to the bin, and you mentioned it in your note, is the unencumbered grain asset, unencumbered grain product assets. What's stopping us from saying we think the bins are that and we're going to claim those for the trust?
I don't think a grain bin is considered grain product, but I don't know how that would – I don't know what would get us to grain product. I mean, if you say bin is grain product,
you say the only other arguable trust
is house. I mean, arguably that would put us all back into the position of.
But if we consider that, then it's not a far stretch to say then the physical elevators are a grain product because they've got the bins that heads the grain stored in it.
The bins, in all likelihood, unless everything is bought and paid for, there are no liens on the property, there are no mortgages, loans against the property, that a bank would start to look at that bin sale, for example, coming up or selling the facilities and say, wait a second, you still, and I don't know what the financial situation is on the facility itself, and I'm not even going to speculate, but if there's any type of a loan against the facility itself, the banks are going to, you know, whoever is, you know.
And we haven't delved into all the security interests.
No.
We know that, I mean, at least we've been told. I mean, there's lots of rumors going around this, but we understand some of the bins hadn't been paid for. There's a security interest against as well,
right.
You know, from
right.
the people who sold them.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is if we went after those unencumbered grain product under the term unencumbered grain assets, saying we think that's what they are. I'm saying, I know you guys don't, but say we did do that, we'd be then in a legal tangle with the banks or anybody else who has a potential issue with
the transit. We could also be in a legal tangle with people who have judgments against them because those judgment liens may apply to those assets as well, which are some of our beneficiaries. But the question is, to me, there's no way to read grain bins into the unencumbered grain product assets. But if we do decide, or if the commission wants us to say, okay, go ahead and do that, the question to me becomes, where do we stop?
Mm-hmm.
I think we just have to be realistic. It's a non-starter in terms of our ability to go.
It's also,
that's my legal opinion.
What can we?
It's also deflecting resources that other trust beneficiaries could say should have been put into
right.
what you can do.
And as much as it pains me to say that, I think we have to go. We have to concentrate on areas where we can move the needle and be productive in whatever.
To Randy's point about how to communicate this, I don't think this is what you're talking about, but the reason why I was wanting to have Stacy come in here is because I'm thinking that, you know, just as a starting point, and I want the lawyers to give their opinion on this because you may put the kibosh on it, but just a frequently asked question or just some basic information that we can put in writing and have available on our website, or maybe we do a news release on it with some answers to some of these basic questions about our authority. And not, I mean, is there problems with us doing that?
I don't think so. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it, but as long as it's accurate. I mean, really,
right.
To me, it's, you know.
That would be the goal.
You're appointed. Right? I mean, but there's a perception that if we're the trustee, that we're the trustee of everything, and that's, I think, what needs to maybe be relayed. But,
right.
You know, we have a court order that appoints us with the powers in the statute, so it's kind of like, you know, you can go read them. I mean,
yeah,
it is the law.
Well, I think we need to do something like that, even just put it together, see how it is, have you guys involved in it so that it is completely legally accurate and is available to help people understand, A, what we're trying to accomplish and what we're required to focus on under the law, and then what some of these other, you know, limitations are, the facts with them.
Yeah, lawyers aren't always the best people to answer those questions or fill those things out because we overcomplicate.
No, but you can look at it. Yeah.
Same thought, just maybe a slightly different approach, or maybe not, because you haven't said either way. So I'm not, rather than guess on the direction you were going, I'll just say it. But how many claimants total again at this point in time?
59.
So 59. If we were to draft something going through what we can do, what we can't do, and some of them know through conversations, but just to put a very comprehensive letter together and here's what we can do, here's what we can't do. And I know quite a bit of this has been communicated as they've called in. I think there's been other correspondence, but I think that would be the first place to start, is with the people that are actually, the producers that are actually faced with losses, so they can then take that and know, you know, you hate to, I shouldn't say hate to say it, but yeah, at that point they need to consider, if they haven't already, legal representation in terms of how they go after.
You know, I don't, Conrad, you could speak to this more than I could, but I have not, I've had some calls from lawyers about things that are going on. I haven't had claimants calling me and saying, I thought you guys did this, I thought you did that. Have you had claimants saying, you know, we want you to do something about this? I mean, overall, what I would characterize kind of the calls I get are people telling us, hey, this is going on, hey, this is going on, hey, this is going on. But I really haven't had the calls from the lawyers or the claimants saying, we don't understand your role, we think you should be doing something more. Now, I mean, maybe they will say later, you should have done, I mean, we're going to get, you know, second-guessed or questioned, if you will, on pretty much everything in this. It's just the way that the process goes, but I haven't had the claimant questions of where I've got the impression that they don't understand our role. I've had a lot of public questions being like, you know.
I think it's both claim. I mean, I think it doesn't hurt to start with the claimants, but I think it has to go beyond just the claimants because I think it's a public issue. So.
I would agree with that too. I mean, and to reiterate what Mitch was talking about as well, the calls I had were a lot of FYI, hey, this is out here. Do you know this is happening? You know, and talking to them about that, but it's not, oh, well, we don't understand why you can't do this or why you're not doing this. It was more of just concern, and I appreciate that, and I really encourage people to do that because it's good to get that information so we kind of know about things ahead of time, because that's how a lot of this stuff, we learn about a lot of this so we can research it. But I would agree with Commissioner Fedorchuk that, you know, if we start with the claimants, we still need to get something out there publicly as well, because I think there's just a lot of public misinterpretation and misrepresentation of what exactly is happening.
Well, and we've all heard it. Everything from the bonds that he held were essentially junk bonds, when that's not the case. They're all A-minus or better bonds. They're a high-quality bond. So there's that misinformation that's out there. And
that's the type of stuff, though, that we're not really going to be able to get into, I don't think. No, we can't get into, I mean, we can talk about what we do in our process, but we're not going to be able to address rumors about, you know, what he's doing.
No, I agree with that.
Right.
But I'm just using that as an example that there's there's misinformation, and then there's a lot of, understandably, frustration out there.
And we do, I was going to bring up, we do have a You Should Know. I haven't looked at it in a while, but we do have one dealing with insolvencies and stuff that we could probably pull out into a easier to read, like Q&A type thing, or frequently asked questions. But there is something out there already, for so starters. We can look at that and see. I don't remember how in depth it is.
It goes kind of briefly, covers a lot of things. I know the grain grade dispute process is in there, but I also know there's some insolvency information in there as well.
Well, you guys know what the big issues are, and so you could take that and pull what works and add to it.
Yeah, I don't disagree with communicating to the public overall, but my first priority personally is with the claimants to make sure that there is nothing that they don't understand about this process so they can move forward accordingly, knowing what we can do, what we can't do. I would hate to have even one of them out there who thinks we can provide relief in a particular area only to find out several months later that we can't.
I just want to say, and it's, I'm going back a ways, but Mitch, you said you haven't heard from people who are expecting that we would be doing something differently. I have had contacts from people, and they can't believe that these other assets can just be sold off, and correctly or incorrectly, their perception is whatever amount of equity Hunter has in them, some of it came, you know, he might have had possession of a bin or a pickup or an auger for a year or two, but that he enhanced the amount of equity he has in it last fall when all of a sudden he ceased paying for the grain that he was buying. And they believe that their money for their grain was used to enhance his equity. Now he's selling that stuff and it's going to other people.
Yeah, I've heard that same thing. Or he's buying pickups, or he's buying, you know, all those sorts of things that...
I want to, you know, I know there were some rumors out there as well. I looked at the things on that he was auctioning off, and it only had to do with grain. So I know there's some speculation that it was pickups and vehicles. And, I mean, there was some tractors, augers and grain bins, a seed cleaner, and a grain dryer. But that was to the extent of anything that we know about. I'd also like to add that the gentleman that did the auction, that posted these items on the website, he has been in contact with us as well, and he has spoken with some other attorneys outside of us, which we didn't provide any private legal advice. But he said what he's going to be doing with the money from the proceeds of the auction is depositing it with the sheriff's department due to some of that money he's already had, or the equipment's got some liens on it from judgments and stuff. But that's how, what he's told me, how he's handling it. So from what I understand, it's not going directly back into Hunter's pocket.
Yeah, and I mean, I've had similar comments to what you were talking about, Commissioner Christman, but the comments of, isn't there something you guys can do? But no, I haven't had any comments that people are saying, this is something you guys should do. You know what I mean? The difference there. I mean, everybody's upset about this situation. I mean, it's certainly an unfair situation for the claimants involved. But I think what I was getting is, I think the people understand, the claimants anyway, seem to understand what our actual role is in marshaling the trust assets. Not that it wasn't offensive that he could sell personal property and still maybe get some money.
Well, that might be the difference between talking to a lawyer and talking to somebody who they think should be able to change that or affect it or ignore it or do something differently in how they interpret it. So, and I think that's what we end up getting. You know, people just saying, fine, but that's not right, and so fix it.
After they give up and agree with you, then they call us.
Oh, so it's just a...
It's another frustration in terms of, you know, how much you can and can't talk about when someone calls you, and it seems to be very limited in nature.
When claimants or their lawyers call me, and frankly, I mean, to me, they're part of our beneficiary group, and I'm very frank with them about what's going on.
You can. I'm talking about myself as a commissioner because it's an open case. Yeah. That frustrates me, frankly. Anything else that we haven't covered that you think is worth mentioning?
I think that's a summary of where we're at. I mean,
so
the next steps, I would anticipate our next steps, where if we get into some situation in Roarville that we need guidance from the commission, would be maybe the next step. With you, other than that, it'd probably be the report absent, you know, things coming up in the meantime.
And I've emphasized this to Conrad, but I don't know how much of this gets done here or how much is being done at your office. So we have 59 claims now and an open period until into early April. I hope that doesn't mean that then we get into early April and now for the first time we start looking at these and have to still evaluate a contract to see whether it has all the essential elements and whether it's valid or not. I know not to the point of writing a final report, but I hope that in the meantime we're looking through and the things that we have found incorrect about claims and previous cases, you know, if someone has scale tickets from a different elevator completely or something like that, that we're getting some of that work done, I hope.
Yeah, and I just for your information, I mean, that type of things, the things that are incorrect from previous cases are not like the time-consuming parts of the report. The time-consuming parts of the report would end up being like if their scale tickets don't match the records we have, or, you know, things like that matching up with the records. So, I mean, the things that are clear aren't the things that we know are the law. Those aren't the things that are the time-consuming parts of the report. The parts of the report that I anticipate being an issue is this one, is trying to figure out, are you NODAC, are you Midwest, does it matter, which fund do you go under, things like that. And we're not... Yeah, I mean, we're not going to know that until we get them all in and see where they fit. And frankly, you know, our first responsibility is to get this grain sold. Then we still have boxes of records from these businesses that we need to go through. Mike's doing that as well, Mike and Anthony. I mean, if we, you know, so it's not going to be a fast report, but we're certainly going to get on it, you know, as fast as we can.
Thank you to all of you for... your work. Diligence on this. I know everyone is spending a lot of time and working really hard on this, and that's something the public doesn't see behind the scenes. But for anyone listening, this is not a good situation, but people are really working hard on this end. So thank you.
To that end, if we, again, throw out, if there's value in bringing back yet another one of our retired inspectors on a temporary basis, I would rather you do that than say we just don't have enough time to get to it, or, you know, we're slowed up because we've only got the two guys on the ground, blah, blah, blah. See, maybe one of those guys is available to help us out on a temporary interim basis.
To that extent, is that the commission direction on that portion of it then?
I'm going to defer to Commissioner.
I don't have an objection to that. If we can get additional help to move that process along, whatever things that we could be doing in advance. Just the timing of it is huge.
I'm in agreement as well.
Okay. I'll reach out to the past inspectors and see if we can get any additional assistance there.
You know, it won't be an option to us probably come July. We probably won't have any money with which to do it. But
clarification on what you want for communications then. Work on a frequently asked questions document, and then you did want a letter, a specific letter going to the claimants? Yes or no? Or
I would like.
Okay.
I would like a perhaps a more comprehensive letter, or it might be. I don't think it would be as. I don't want to use the word generic, but they're going to need a little more information, is my thought. And again, maybe they have everything they already need, and they know exactly what they need to know. But I just don't want to assume that.
And I might suggest doing the document, and then we can decide how to distribute it.
Okay,
but it could just be a cover letter to the claimants with the document, or could, however. But once the most important thing is get the information together first, and then we can decide how to distribute it.
At that point, we could decide how to distribute it just public-wise, too.
Is that right.
What you want to do? Okay. Okay.
What else do we need to do in order to hire?
Okay. Good. Thanks, everybody, for your time and for your hard work on this.
Especially so suddenly.
Yep, we are done with the works.